Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Inside Edition here. This is March 21st. I'm your host, John Robb. We are glad to have you all with us. We got 60 minutes today of the show with two great authors. We're going to kick it off with author C.S. Harris, followed by Paige McKenzie. So it's going to be a very, very exciting show. We're pleased that all of you are here to join us and talk to us about everything that's going on. A lot of things to get into, so we're going to go ahead right now and not waste any more time. We are going to get in with our first guest. She is author C.S. Harris. Her latest book is called Who Buries the Dead? It's a Sebastian St. Croix book. And so I probably said the C-R-Y wrong, or the C-Y-R-Y. But C.S., we want to thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So I know that I butchered the last name. I know it's Sebastian Saint.
Sear.
See, I can't. I'm so bad at last names. Thank God your last name is Harris. I can't mess that up. So Who Buries the Dead? Well, I could mess it up, but good thing I didn't. So Who Buries the Dead is the latest book in the series. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the book, and then for people who are just finding out, because this is the 10th book in the series, maybe, just a quick little catch-up of maybe where it's come to date.
Oh, okay. It's, as you said, this is the 10th book in the series. It begins with the murder of a West Plantation owner who is found at a bridge at the edge of the city, decapitated, with his head sitting up at the top of the bridge, and his body nearby with a coffin strap that says King Charles, 1648. That's what starts out the book. And so Sebastian is a viscount, the son and heir of an earl, but he has come back from the war very disturbed by the experiences and events in the war. And he has, in a sense, he really seeks his redemption and finding justice for the victims of murder. And he's drawn into this particular murder, even though he has moral difficulties with the victim, who's a slave owner and has made his wealth from plantations worked by slaves. It's a very brutal murder, and it's a very curious murder because it seems to increasingly be tied up with the stewards. And so that's what sets him off. And it also involves Jane Austen, which, because she actually lived very near, well, her brother lived very near, and this was at the time her sister-in-law was dying. So she is in London for that. And yeah, it's, as I said, it's the 10th book in the series, but each book is very much a standalone. There is an overarching storyline that goes to it, but each book can very much be a new reader can come at each book.
Now, the one thing I'm curious to ask, because every title kind of asks a question. It starts with what angels fear. And then When Gods Die, and now we go to Who Buries the Dead. Was the book to answer the question of the title of the books?
No. It was something that I started with the first books in the series. They were I just had this idea for these question titles that appealed to me. The title, it is more directly tied to the actual mystery. Sometimes it's more tied to the theme that mm-hmm. the mystery brings out.
Now with 10 books out, of course, now you have a large catalog for Sebastian. I mean, now he's had a lot of adventures, many different things that have come his way. So when you're sitting down and you're thinking of Who Buries the Dead and you're thinking about how to kind of do something else with him, how difficult is that for you when now you're in the 10th book, but you have to try to keep the series as fresh as possible and make sure that it keeps moving forward? What's your greatest challenge with that?
So far, I haven't felt bored with the series. The series still excites me. Part of it, I think, is because it does have an overarching storyline, a mystery that's tied up to Sebastian's parents, his mother, what happened to his mother, who is his real father, and also a personal story of in terms of the loves in his life. So that mm-hmm. part of the storyline excites. And I just don't seem to have trouble finding new storylines to that engage me. The main problem I think that I have with the series is that this series has quite an extensive cast of characters that my readers all enjoy and they all want to see, and it's not always possible to bring each one back or give him the kind of attention I feel like he needs in each book. So that's probably the main challenge. Plus, there's a challenge to make sure that each reader, that new readers can come at each book, and that even though there is an overarching storyline, that readers can come into this series and not feel like, oh, I'm missing something, I don't get what's happening. So I always do make an effort to make sure that that's possible.
And seeing as how the books are set, like this book is set in London in 1813, you have a link that dates all the way back to 1648. There's a lot of research that has to kind of go in with planning a book like this, well, in a series like this, because the books alone are set way back in time, 200 years ago now. How are you able to kind of, make sure that you're able to link things up correctly and use the right kind of terminologies when you're crafting a book like this, especially in a time frame that, you didn't live in?
It is a challenge. I won't deny that. I did do a lot of research. My PhD was in the history of Europe, 1750 to 1850. So I started writing the series with a very strong grounding in the political, military events of the period, as well as a really good understanding of the cultural, the literature, the philosophy of the time. So I started with that grounding, but with each book, obviously, I have to do a lot of research that pertains to that particular story. I have to spend a lot of time becoming aware of what London was like at that time, because mm-hmm. London has changed so dramatically. So I have a lot of maps and guidebooks to London at the beginning of the 19th century that I use all the time. And the language is definitely another challenge, because there are so many words that we take for granted that you can't use. And then at the same time, there are words that they use that we don't use today, so you can't use that. So in a sense, your language is very restricted. But I also, know a lot of historical authors make a real attempt to have a kind of a very mannered historical language, but to me it comes off sounding stilted, and I didn't want that. I wanted it to sound. I didn't want my protagonist Sebastian to sound old fashioned and stilted. I wanted him to sound energetic and virile, and so it's a fine line to walk between not using language that is going to trip the reader up because it's going to be an anachronism, but at the same time making a book that is easy to read and that conveys the kind of emotions that you want to convey. So yeah, it is a tight walk, and inevitably I make mistakes. I really try hard not to, but they creep in, and I just have to say, well, sorry, keep going.
And, well, and the other thing when you're writing a book that is set so far back, the one thing, of course, not just the language, but the technology is so much different. I remember it wasn't too long ago that a friend of mine said that he was reviewing a book and he was like beta reading it for it, and it was set in like 1973, and the author had somebody standing on the corner holding a cell phone and talking, and he started laughing like, yeah, not in 1973 that didn't happen. So without being able to have the CSI and all the technology and the things, you have to have Sebastian use his intellect, which means he's more along the lines of a Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot kind of character, and I draw on those two because they're the ones that I think a lot of people can relate to, that they have to use their intellect. So is that a difficult thing for you during the series in order to having to do those and keep things fresh? Because without all the technology, it is kind of a challenge to kind of let the reader understand this is not CSI.
It was actually one of the things that drew me to the idea of doing a historical mystery rather than a contemporary one, because I like the old-fashioned mysteries where the murder was solved by investigating who this person was,
right,
and what it was in his life that led to him being a victim of such a horrific crime and could have done this, and what secrets are they hiding. That's the aspect of the mystery that really excites me. So it's nice to get away from the forensic, because I think that as readers and watchers of modern mysteries, we tend to think that all crimes can be solved by forensics, which is unfortunately not true, which is why there are so many unsolved crimes out there. So the CSI stuff is fun. I enjoy reading about it too. And Sebastian is aided by Paul Gibson, who's a surgeon who generally looks at the bodies that are involved in the murders and can sometimes find things that will help him. But I am very careful not to have Gibson's knowledge of anatomy or any other evidences of crimes go beyond what was available. For instance, at the time, they did not have the technology to detect poison, which is fascinating when you think about it. So there were times when they would think that people had committed suicide when they hadn't, or that they just simply could not find the evidence of poison in the body. So that makes it harder for him, but it also makes it more fun as an author to explore.
I find it refreshing to see mysteries that are written this way, because it makes it to where not only does the author have a challenge, but the characters have a challenge. They just can't call up a lab and get DNA results or get all these things or have computer X pulling all these information and this and that, and they're not really finding things out on their own. It's like a team of people. And so I find it very refreshing to see that a character like Sebastian has to go out, and you're writing the fact that he has to, like I said, use his intellect, use the knowledge, use the talking of the people, because then what that does is, I don't know if a lot of people realize, it gives you a sense of all the other secondary characters, because he has to talk to everybody.
Yeah.
And so you have a lot of different dialogue going on. So how do you kind of keep all that straight when you have all that dialogue and all these characters that have to be part of the story because he has to talk to them all?
Well, I use note cards. when I'm plotting out the book, I come up with the idea and write down lists of scenes that I want to have and secrets that my suspects are keeping. And then I put each scene on different colored note cards, and I take over the dining room table for a week or so and scoop my note cards around until I get it plotted out. So, yeah, I could never hold it all in my head, I'm afraid. I'm in awe of people who can do that. I need to have it all written down.
Yeah. I mean, when you give out clues and you're leaving things around, do you ever sit there and say, they might not catch that, or the reader might catch it too early, and you maybe have to change things up and move things around to where it's not maybe so obvious about how things are going to end?
I've realized that I can never predict what readers are going to see. This last book, when my younger daughter read it, she said, "Oh, I thought that the killer was the most obvious in this book of any of the ones I've read." And I thought, "Oh, really?" Because I was afraid that he came out of nowhere. And then I had, I can't judge. And sometimes I'll have that where a reader will say, "Well, you didn't give enough clues." And I'll think, "Really? I thought I was giving too many." So I think it depends on the individual reader, what they pick up. The clues are always there pointing to the killer, not from the very beginning, because that wouldn't be fair to Sebastian, I think, because he needs to, he's an intelligent man, and it's going to take him a while to come to these conclusions in the same way with the reader. But the clues are always there. But as I said, as an author, I can't predict which ones my readers are going to pick up on. It really does vary.
Well, I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author C.S. Harris. Go to csharris.net for more information, of course, on this book, Who Buries the Dead, the 10th novel now in the Sebastian St. Cyr series. And the other thing that people will find out, of course, is, you write under the name C.S. Graham. You also started off when you wrote a lot of historical romances under Candace Proctor. So are those kind of your alter egos?
The C.S. Graham series was really fun to write because it was contemporary. And it was such a wonderful luxury to just be able to use my own language, the words and what I was familiar with in terms of, as you were talking, technology.
Right.
So that was very refreshing, and I think in a sense it's good for me as a writer to switch back and forth between the two. It's a way of reinvigorating yourself as a writer. The historical romances I think were more similar, and because they were historical, I think maybe probably the main difference between those books and the mysteries is that they have an even greater emphasis on character and emotion than the mysteries do. The mysteries do as well, but I think that the romances were of course, that's the focus in those. So they're all sort of different aspects, I think, of me as a writer. But I think it's very healthy for a writer to keep doing different things, because then you don't get tired, you don't get into a rut, which is really easy, I think, for a lot of readers to have that happen. I mean, a lot of writers to have that happen.
Is there still a genre that you would like to tackle, or an era that you would like to get involved in and write? Do you still have something outside of what you have put out right now that you still want to explore?
I have a few things, yeah. I'd like to do a literary book, a book that I can really focus on character and on language in ways you can't do with a genre book. Genre books are fun, but they're also constricting in the sense that you're bound by the expectations of the readers, where a literary book allows you to just follow the story where you want to go. And I think in a sense, too, it would be fun to do a contemporary mystery. Not a very heavy CSI one, but one that sort of brings Sebastian into the 21st century and let him have fun.
maybe time warp him a little bit, or something happens. Or you know what? Maybe his great 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 grandson, and then you write one, and then it's in and he gets from his. Who knows? You know, there's endless possibilities, and I think that's the fun part of writing. Is that you're able to create something really from a blank canvas, and it's just whatever vision you see. And I think that no matter kind of what it is, as long as it's written well and things flow well, I think that, you know, people gravitate and it's good stories.
I think that especially today, there is more of an opportunity for stories that don't fit the mold to at least be read, if not be published traditionally. That is the nice thing about the new modern age in publishing. There's a lot that's scary about it, but that's one aspect of it that is good, I think. Yeah.
What's one of the last books that you read, just maybe just for fun, that you could recall that you thought was just good?
Ironically, what I'm reading right now is my own historical romances. I just got the rights back to all seven of them, and so I've been on this marathon Candace Proctor read because I'm going to be selling the books again, and I'm reading through them to see if there's anything I want to change or any kind of modification.
Sure.
So seven, after, you know, I'm plowing through seven of those. That's in terms of my own reading pace, I'm a huge fan of Bernard Cornwell, Martin Cruz Smith, Pat Conroy, James Lee Burke. I am in awe of their talents, and I really enjoy them.
You know, Doug, you mentioned James Lee Burke, and almost every author I interview all mention his name, but he seems like an author that doesn't get a lot of recognition from a lot of awards places and a lot of, conferences and things like that, and I just wonder why it is. Dave Robichaud's series seems to be like a standard that a lot of series writers try to match.
Well, he has one too, Edgar's, and I think some other ones. They're different books. They're not your standard mysteries. They are very have a huge emphasis on character and on atmosphere and place, a sense of place. And mm-hmm. so I think that's something that appeals a lot to writers. But I'm not sure if it appeals as much to mainstream readers as maybe some of the more fast-paced and easier books do. So I think that's why he tends to appeal to authors, because they have such great admiration for what he does.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. He has. I know so many authors. John Connolly is one who comes to mind.
John Connolly.
He really
loves
has inspired. Yeah, he really does. Yeah. He's another author.
Oh yeah, John Connolly with his Parker, I believe, too. Yeah, he's one, and he's a good one too. Yeah, and he's a good one because he's one of the only authors that actually sells well in the United States and sells well in Europe. A lot of that doesn't translate. There's a lot of great American authors that just don't sell well in Europe, and vice versa. So it's very difficult to try to find that connection between continents where both sell the same. But John Connolly is one of them. But now here's $1 million for you, and of course. And I'm sure you've been asked this 1,000 times, so I'm going to make this 1,001. But when people come up and they're just finding out about, you know, the series, where do you tell them that they should start?
Well, they can read this book. As I said, they're complete standalones. But if someone wanted to start the series, I would suggest that they start at the very beginning with What Angels Fear. Because the series does have a mystery and an overarching storyline that runs through it, that in terms of Sebastian's personal life and it's really in a lot of ways a story of his redemption. So mm-hmm. he changes. He's very much a character who changes as the series progresses, which is maybe one of the reasons that I find it easy to keep it fresh, because he is a character who's constantly changing and evolving, so that's part of it. But, yeah, I would start with the beginning, with the first book, and work through it, unless you just want to jump right in with this book because the story intrigued you, and then that's fine. That works, too. Then you can always go back. I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, start at number 7, 8, and then go back and catch up. You know.
Well, we got about a minute left, and so what I want to do is I want to be able to kind of give you the last word to be able to let people know maybe where they can contact you, your social media, all that kind of fun stuff. So I leave it up to you to kind of have the last word, CS.
Oh, okay. Well, I am. I do have a website, csharris.net. I am on Facebook and I have a blog as well that I update about once a week or two. So that's it, csharris.blogspot.com.
And do you do a lot? Are you doing a lot of signings for this book? Are you going to be at any conferences? Are you going to be at Thriller Fest or PNWA and, you know, Killer Nashville, all those places, or do you not really, are you not really on the circuit place?
I did just came off of a book tour, a 5-city book tour for this book. I don't have any plans right now to go to some of the earlier conferences. I'm actually going to London for a while. And so
you're not gonna,
so that's
going
my
to Crime
big
Fest
travel.
In May? Is it Crime Fest in May, or you're not going to go to a conference?
No, I'm just going. I'm going with my daughter, and she's lived there, and so I'm taking her. I used to go to London a lot. Haven't been there for a while. She's very familiar with the new London, and so we're just going to go a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and just wander around, take lots of pictures of what's left of Sebastian's London.
Awesome! That is great. Good, good, good. Well, you enjoy. And we want to thank you so much for coming on and joining us today and wish you nothing but the best. And we'll keep in touch about how Sebastian's going to come out here in Book 11.
Great. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is author C.S. Harris. The book is out now. It is called Who Buries the Dead? It is the 10th book in the Sebastian St. Cyr series. Started back with What Angels Fear, but this one is Who Buried the Dead. So you can check out all the books. Go to csharris.net for a lot more information, of course, and all the other writings that she says that she writes under Candace Proctor and C.S. Graham. You will see all that there. We are going to take a break, and we are going to then be back with our next guest. She is author Paige McKenzie, and we are going to speak about her book, The Haunting of the Sunshine Girl. So stick around for that, and we will see you all right after you listen to this.
Okay, everybody, here we go. We got some great new stuff for you guys to check out. Author David Lyons is back with his latest book in his Jock Boucher series, Waters of Oblivion. This is the third book in the series, and it could possibly be the best. Here at Suspense Magazine, we call it a must-read, a great espionage thriller, so you need to check out DavidLyonsAuthor.com. for a lot more information on this book and the rest of the series. Midnight Ink is celebrating 10 years of great mystery suspense books, and we are always excited to receive a new Midnight Ink book, just because we always know it's of the very highest quality with fabulous authors. Make sure that you visit midnightinkbooks.com and discover some of those fabulous new authors to place on your shelf. Would you become a serial killer to save your child? Because that's one of the questions author Mike Pace asks in his latest book, One to Go. Steve Barry says terrific, ripping good, explosive excitement, says Douglas Preston, and relentlessly suspenseful, says John Land. So you need to visit MikePaceBooks.com for more information on that. Also, new from author Jamie Mason is Monday's Lie. Jamie May placed her name solidly in the suspense genre with her last book, Three Graves Full, and Monday's Lie should appeal to fans of The Americans and Homeland. So do yourself a favor, check out Monday's Lie, and visit Jamie on her website at jamie-mason.com. Don't forget the hyphen. Now, when Brad Thor calls your book awesome, and one of the hottest authors in the thriller genre, you definitely need to start taking notice. And from Kensington Press is author Mark Cameron with his latest book, Day Zero. Also, Candace Fox brings Horror Abound in her latest book, Hades. So visit kensingtonbooks.com for a lot more on all of their titles. To catch a satanic killer, Detective Jennifer Mueller will go into the Devil's Reach. And that's the title of author Lewis Weinberg's latest book. It's graphic, gritty, wildly entertaining are just some of the words that are being used to describe this latest thriller. So make sure you go to Lewis Weinberger, WEINBERGER.com for a lot more information on everything he's got going on. And just remember, we want to tell everyone to make sure that you check out all of our sponsors by visiting too, suspensemagazine.com. You can get the magazine, see what all we have going inside. And thanks for all the support that you all guys do, because without you, we wouldn't have this radio show and these magazines, and we wouldn't be able to bring this fine stuff to you. So again, we want to thank all of you guys out there for listening, and enjoy the show.
and tremble, like a sin is all inside.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back here after the break. Again, we want to welcome, we want to thank C.S. Harris for coming out and talking about her book, Who Buries the Dead. We are going to jump right in here now with our next guest. She is author Paige McKenzie. Her book is called The Haunting of Sunshine Girl. Paige is something also that is very, very unique by incorporating YouTube into her book. So we want to get her on because I'm a ghost story lover. I'm excited to talk to Paige. So, Paige, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Like I said, this is you're like one of the first ones that kind of you have a very popular YouTube channel. You kind of incorporated YouTube with the book, so you've made it really kind of come to life in more of a four-dimensional way, I guess you want to say. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the book, The Haunting of Sunshine Girl?
Yeah, so The Haunting of Sunshine Girl, it originally started on YouTube. I have a YouTube series called The Haunting of Sunshine Girl, if you want to check it out. And then this opportunity to be the author of a book came about, and so the book is essentially the first playlist on the YouTube. And if you haven't seen the YouTube, which totally okay if you haven't, it's about a girl, Sunshine, who moves into a haunted house with her mother. And you think that the house is kind of haunted and creepy, and you kind of figure out that it's a lot more and deeper than you originally thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tease that. There you go.
So, give us now, the Sunshine Girl. Now, it says here on your site that it's been described as, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets kind of Veronica Mars. Two kind of different things, but you know, very much into kind of an audience you would see would be more a little, you know, I guess a little on the younger side, but it's very much more of an adult thriller also. So kind of explain, to, you know, kind of a little bit about, you know, Sunshine Girl and the character and whatnot, as it would kind of appeal to like adult readers and kind of, you know, how they get excited about because of the ghost story aspect.
Yeah. I never like subscribed to that label of like, you have to watch, like, I'm not allowed to watch Disney movies because I'm 20, you know, like, you're too old for that or whatever, or you're too young to read this book because it's scary or whatever. I feel like that's not a thing. Like, I think, you know, people are allowed to read whatever they want if they're mature enough and watch whatever they want if they're, you know, young at heart. So I always think that there's a draw in every kind of aspect in that way. And definitely for Sunshine, she's, you know, she's brave and not all adults are. You think that they are. I mean, as a kid, you're like, oh, all adults know exactly what they're doing, and they all, you know, they got their life together and stuff. And then you get older, and you're like, nobody has it together. We're all just making it up as we go along.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that Sunshine kind of is in that way relatable because she is brave, and she kind of figures it out. And even, and in fact, in the book, she is kind of the adult. Sunshine's mom is, you know, something's happening. I won't, you know, give away too much, but she kind of has to take care of her mom. She kind of has to be the mom. She kind of has to figure it out. So that's kind of, you know, exciting.
Yeah, kind of has to grow up a little faster than I guess her age would want her to kind of grow up, kind of lose out some of her childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that, now, the story started on YouTube and you kind of did everything, and then you said that you kind of had this opportunity to write the book, kind of. How did that come about and to write the book? And is the book an extension of the channel, or is it just more along the lines of writing it down that what you have going on with the story in the channel?
Yeah,
that makes
so,
sense? It makes sense
no,
in my head when I was thinking of the question, but when it came out, I don't know if it made sense.
No, it totally did. That's hilarious. So it came about, I entered into a contest for 17 magazine, and there were two pages. There was only five of us that were, you know, chosen to be, to be finalists to go to New York and everything. And there were two pages, and I thought that was so strange. It was like, there was like a ton of people who entered. You couldn't have picked a person with a different name. So it ended up working out really well, and the other page was very nice. And she was writing a book at the time, and her agent, her literary agent, was looking for information on that page on the 17 magazine website, and she accidentally stumbled upon this page, me, and she was like, oh my gosh, you should write a book. And I was like, whoa, I've never written a book. That is very strange. I don't know how to do that. I wasn't even very good at English. And she was like, no, you can do it. You can do this. Like, don't worry about it. So then we kind of came up with the concept, and I have a co-author, Alyssa Scheinmel, who obviously helped a ton because, you know, I've never written a book. I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very good at YouTube, but I'm not good at, you know, writing. So it was awesome, and she helped me essentially tell the first storyline. So they're broken up into seasons on our YouTube, and so I'm up to season 12 now. Over 1,000 videos, a lot to watch. So I understand, you know, if you haven't watched them, watch all of them. So it's the first season, and it's just kind of a retelling from there. And it's essentially, you know, the same sort of thing with more detail. If you've seen the YouTube, there'll be exciting things that you'll be able to relate to. You'll be like, oh my gosh, I remember that from a video. But if you haven't seen it, it makes complete and utter sense. There's no, you don't have to watch the series to understand the book.
Well, and the thing is a literary, you know, kind of the literary field that you're in now, when you're writing a book and you're talking to somebody like me, you probably wouldn't be talking to somebody like me and people that do what we do if it was just, you know, like the YouTube series. So how is that kind of dynamic different? Because I guess you want to say that the book people and maybe the video, things are just a little bit on the different side. So how has that kind of dynamic been? Now that the book comes out in a couple of days, it comes out March 24th. Well, everybody knows the book comes out March 24th. So, yeah, very excited. So how has it been now that you're talking about a book, and like I said, you're talking to a lot of people, you know, it's not myself, but there's a lot of stuffy people in this industry when they talk about books. So how's that been?
It's been really good. I haven't, you know, experienced necessarily the stuffy people, but everybody in the literary world is very nice and very girl-powered, which I really like. It's been a really good, exciting whirlwind of a ride.
And the good thing is that since you are on YouTube and you're very familiar with the camera, it's very easy. You can just hear that when you're speaking about, you know, your work, that it doesn't come off. There's a lot of people, believe me, there's a lot of authors I interview that are boring. and that's what I don't understand. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of big-time New York Times authors that are just so boring when you talk to them that you just never want to have them back on again. So it's good to see this, you know, this life that comes from your writing, and that you can hear it when you're speaking about it. And I just want to congratulate you. Now, what kind of books were you and stories were you drawn to? Well, I would say when you're younger, but you are young. So, you know, what was kind of the story that you kind of drew yourself to that made you think that this is kind of the genre and this is the thing that you wanted to do?
Yeah, first off, thank you. I am a big fan of the written word. I'm a big book person. People say I'm a ferocious reader. So I was, the opportunity, when it knocked, I was very excited. I never thought I would write a book because that's not really something I ever, I mean, I have a lot of hats I wear, and I like being able to try different things, especially with the YouTube. It's been, you know, try directing and try, you know, writing some stuff and, you know, makeup and set design or whatever. And so with this, it's been really fun to put on another hat and do that. And I don't even know. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and we have Powell's here. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's amazing. It's a very large, awesome bookstore. And I am drawn to young adult fantasy, kind of, but I read just about everything. I read everything. I'm trying to think if there's any kind of genre I don't read. I don't really like war novels. They're a little boring. I'm not into history that much. But other than that, yeah, I read just about everything.
Well, and it looks like you're going to be, and if people go to your website, which is thehauntingofsunshinegirl.com, where that's where they can find out about the book. Now, of course, they can go to YouTube and find out about the video. But you got quite an extensive little tour that you're going to be going on here, starting on March 24th when you launch it in Portland. So are you getting excited for that?
I am. I'm getting super excited. I have a little book tour I'm going on, which is just crazy. It's a little, you know, a little scary, but it's going to be fun. And I'll get to meet a bunch of people, which is fun. And, you know, I'll get to meet fans of YouTube and also fans of, you know, the new book that's coming out. So that's exciting. And
right.
I get to do an event with R.L. Stine, the author of Goosebumps. So that's cool.
Yeah, Bob is definitely a very cool guy. I met him many, many times, of course, at Thriller Fest. You have to ask him about his most famous story about an email that he got from a young child. He loves to talk about that story, and it is so funny. So make sure you remember to ask him about his favorite email that he got from a child one time about his it's hilarious if you haven't heard the story. So I just tell anybody, if you ever talk, you got to ask him about that. But,
okay, I will.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But you're going to kind of, now, and I see you're going to be at the LA Times Books Festival and this and that. So this is all going to be kind of new for you. Do you think that after this book that you're going to be writing more, that this is going to be more of an extension from, you're going to be doing YouTube and writing and maybe having them coincide with each other? Or do you think that you might do other stories besides Sunshine Girl if you do continue to write?
Well, there is definitely going to be a second, possible third book of The Haunting of Sunshine Girl. So those are, you know, very exciting to get excited about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you already have things done? Did you already contract it for all of that?
Book two, we're in the works. We're talking about, I'm thinking about exactly what's going to happen. So, yeah, with Alyssa Scheinmull again.
Getting involved in all that. Yeah, that's always the fun part. But now, the scary part, too, is now you have a deadline. Before, you really didn't have a deadline. Now your publisher's like, well, you got your stuff going on? What's going on? You know, you get a write, this is what's happening? Yeah, so that's all just a little bit different, too. Yeah.
Yes, that's so true.
It is. It's a much a bit, I mean, it's just big, you know, it's a whole new world getting involved with this literary stuff. But I'll tell you, publishing is just so... it's so strange. I'll just say that.
Really
know about it, and you're probably learning about so much more. But the one thing I want to talk to you about is the scary stories that you have listed on your website. What is that?
Those are stories I have received, whether through email or other, you know, markets of transportation of messages, and they are just really fascinating. Anybody can. Put them in, send them in. So if you want to send me a scary scary story, you know, send me one. And I even pay.
You even pay people to put them up there?
Yeah, I give you $10 to have a story on my website. Yeah, it's better than the $10 you didn't have before.
Exactly. So, and now, I mean, and that's true. So now, when you're looking at your co-author, Alyssa, was it Scheinmull?
Alyssa Scheinmull.
Scheinmull. How was that kind of working together? Because this was like the first time that you ever had to do something like that. Was you know, now you're working together with somebody constructing the book. How was that dynamic?
Super duper. She's very nice, and it's been YouTube has been a collaboration. I have business partners that I do this with, so it's always been, you know, that kind of group love. And so when the book came about, obviously it just made sense that it would be a collaboration again. So it's been great. It's felt like home.
And have you gotten a lot of were you kind of scared when you started putting your book out there and you started getting you know, reviews back, and you're like, oh my god, you know, without a little anxiety, trying to figure out where people are going to like it, what are they going to say about it?
Yes. And the other thing is on the YouTube, you put up a video and you get instant reaction. You get immediate, somebody will tell you if they hate it or not. Like, they'll be like, oh my gosh, I love it. Or it's super stupid. So with the book, it's been, you write it, the process, and then you
it's
go.
It's slower.
Yeah, it's much slower. It takes time, and then you finally get, you like send the book out, and then people read it, and then they're like, oh, it was really good, or it was terrible. So it's been, you know, it's definitely been a change. I'm getting used to it. A little slower reaction, but it's good.
Yeah, that's the one thing. So, I mean, you know, I'm older. I mean, in my childhood, I mean, I wanted my privacy. I didn't want my stuff out on social media. I didn't. I'm not a Facebook first person. I'm not a. I always call social media weapons of mass destruction. But in, you know, but my daughter's 22. My other daughter's 18. So I know about, you know, of course, I use it for various things. So how are you kind of able, because now that this is the generation that's going to be moving forward, and when you're 50, who knows what's going to happen, you know, in the next 30 years with all these things. So how are you able to kind of use all of that and maneuver around to be able to, you know, get fans and find your marketing and do all of your things to be able to use it in a positive aspect?
Yeah, I am essentially on every social media platform there is. I mean, I'm on all of them, and my whole world is kind of out there. Sunshine is essentially me. So there's not a lot of privacy, but I've kind of, you know, grown up on it. I was 16 when I started the channel, and so I'm, you know, I kind of say I'm a YouTube baby. I kind of matured on YouTube. So yeah, it's been interesting, and I would not have said I'm that social media savvy person, but it's kind of the way it turned out, and the interaction is very key on the show, you know, people being able to write in and tell me about their lives, or I mean all of it. So it's been good. It's been really good, and I don't, you know, social media.
Now how are you able to kind of keep the series fresh? Do you guys have you said you work with some people, so do you guys sit down, collaborate, writing team, things like that? What do you kind of do to kind of keep things fresh and keep things moving?
The whole series is actually, we call it unscripted fictional reality. So kind of wrap your brain around that for a second. Unscripted fictional reality. So nothing is scripted. Everything I say, I make up. We have a general storyline. I go from point A to point B. There'll be occasional times when I have to say a certain thing so that somebody else knows when to, you know, do something, enter, or, you know, whatever. And but other than that, everything is kind of, we have a, you know, we make it up. We take a lot of inspiration from tons of stuff. I mean, other movies, books, fans will write in and say some things. We don't necessarily, you know, do everything that the fans say, because that would be crazy. But
really.
So I mean, I think we keep it pretty fresh. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe it's really boring. I don't know. Check up. Go watch Twice.
I mean, you have fun doing it. I mean, that's something like, how do you keep yourself engaged all the time to, you know, sit down and do another series and or do another episode and things like that? So you personally, how are you able to do it just to keep yourself to where you know, you don't get bored?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I do it. I think, you know, I just add another social media site and work on that, and then I mean, I don't know. It's really fun. I just, like, have to keep thinking, like, at least I'm not working at McDonald's. Like, at least that's not my life. You know? So I think it just comes down to, like, being really grateful for what I have. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not bored anymore. Like, next.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Because you've created, because you've created more of a brand now with Sunshine Girl that people would know, you know, that name more than almost your real name. So that's got to be a little bit kind of, you know, that's got to be a little bit different. You're like, look, I'm not the Sunshine Girl. That's just a character. This is really who I am.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. And it was for a while that my name wasn't out there. Paige McKenzie was not, like, even still to this day when people are like, man, Paige McKenzie. I'm like, you can say my name. Just kidding. Like,
right.
For a while, I was just the Sunshine Girl because privacy was, you know, I was 16 at the time. I wanted my security and my privacy, and there are, you know, a couple weirdos on YouTube. So I wanted to be safe. Yeah. I was being nice. That was why that started. And so still, I don't really mind that it's, you know, more of a Sunshine thing. And I mean, sometimes it is a little like people will interview and be like, so how's it going, Sunshine? And I'm like, that's nice, but my name's Paige, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not Sunshine. So yeah, it's been fun. Yeah, I mean, to say the least.
Yeah. Now, when you sat down to write the book and you kind of had your outline, you kind of had your how you really kind of wanted it to go. did you have any secondary characters that kind of popped up during the writing of the book that you were like, wow, you know, they kind of have more of a voice than I expected them to have?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's only so much you can do on YouTube. There's only so much you can show. I mean, I didn't film anything at school. It was essentially just my house. And so when the book came about, I was able to write so much more detail. So, like, I mean, there's tons in the school, and there's more with the male counterpart, early love interest. I wouldn't say that. Just, you know, the boy version of Sunshine, kind of. And then there is a character in YouTube called Creepy Lady, and she definitely kind of popped out of the woodwork in the book. And I was like, whoa, okay, I guess that's what's going to happen then. So it was good. I liked it. I liked the way it turned out. So, I mean, I'm pretty proud of it. So we'll see if other people like it.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, the cover alone kind of gets you to think that there's something a lot more going on, you know, with this girl on the cover. I mean, just from looking at it, kind of suspended in air in a very beautiful dress, but not really knowing, like, what's, like, going behind, you know, who she is and really what's, you know, the mystery might be, you know, exactly who she is. But, you know, she's a 16-year-old, and so she has a lot of 16-year-old problems that are kind of going up. And so you've pretty much written a character that is right in your wheelhouse because you go through the same things every day.
Yeah, I mean, just like I said, Sunshine is me. I mean, I went to prom, Sunshine went to prom. I am celiac, Sunshine is celiac. But, I mean, it's very similar. I mean, we have, you know, there's like, I say we're 98.9% the same. There's just a couple different things, like she deals with ghosts and I don't. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Those are a little different, but yeah, I mean, it seems to have worked out fine for me. So.
what was the most difficult part in writing the book? What was the thing that you were struggling with? Some people struggle with dialogue. Some people struggle with, you know, seeing, you know, writing and things like that. What was your biggest problem? What was your difficult part?
I think that it was probably, like, just from, like, the very beginning, thinking how it was going to be taking it from video form into written form. That was my big, like, had to get over that kind of thing. But it was from the very beginning, so it was, you know, took a minute, and then I was like, okay, figure it out, get it together. And I did, so, you know, it worked out. And, you know, I had a co-author who was super great, and she's written novels before, so she was like, this is easy, don't worry about it, it's going to be fine. So
right.
I trusted her, and it worked.
Yeah, this is easy. Yeah, it's cool. Don't worry about it. We're all good to go.
Yeah, I say that about videos, and she says that about writing. So it's like, I guess if she needs a video ever I'm the one to go to.
Yeah. So you probably taught her a lot, and she taught you a lot on just the different things of what you both are experts in doing.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the story already. It was there. It wasn't like I had pulled it out of nowhere. It was there.
Right.
It's the first playlist. And she just, you know, she taught me how to write it all down. Because I told you, like I said, I don't know how to do that. So, you know, I taught her who Sunshine was.
So, kind of the last, so kind of wrapping up, if people were to just find out about you and go to the YouTube and start watching the videos, maybe after they read the book or vice versa, I don't think it really makes that big of a difference if they do one or the other first. But
yeah.
Where do you think that they should go to YouTube and just start with episode one, season one, the whole thing at the very beginning, or can they kind of jump in anywhere?
It would make more sense to start from the beginning because, like I said, it is a storyline. There is an arc. But, you know, I've had people jump in the middle and then go back and watch episode one, season one. So it can be a little confusing. YouTube is a little bit of a strange platform, so that kind of story is a little, it could be hard to follow, but I hope I've set it up pretty good that you'll figure it out that this is season one, this is season two, watch this one first and this one. So hopefully, yeah, if you want to check it out, though, yeah, The Haunting of Sunshine Girl on YouTube.
So give you like the last little word, last minute, let everybody kind of know all the sites, the social media, make sure you have the Facebook, everything. And just kind of let everybody know where they can find out all the information because, I mean, you, like you said, you're everywhere.
I am everywhere. I am on YouTube, obviously, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Tumblr, what else? Snapchat.
My Lord.
All of them. You can go to my website and you can find all of them. Or they're in the videos. You can like see where I am. I just added another social media site called Meerkat, relatively new. If you haven't heard of it, don't worry. You'll know soon. So yeah, I mean, I like I said, I'm everywhere. I think I missed a couple too. Google+. I don't know. Yeah. So I have all of them. Check out the website. That'll really tell you everything you need to know. So thehauntingofsunshinegirl.com.
Yeah, my and just from seeing all the social media sites, I'm like, oh, I realize I'm so antisocial.
yeah, right. No joke.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paige, it's been exciting to be able to talk with you. I wish you nothing but the best. Can't wait to see how everything goes forward. Good luck and have a lot of fun. And if you need any help from us, just let us know. And we look forward to seeing how everything goes in the future. So congratulations.
Cool. Thanks so much, man.
All right. You have a good one, and we'll talk with you soon.
Yep. Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye. So again, everybody, that is author Paige McKenzie with the book, The Haunting of Sunshine Girl. Go to YouTube, type in, Haunting of Sunshine Girl to go to the channel. Go to hauntingofsunshinegirl.com for all the information. You can find out, about the book, the YouTube, everything is right there. She is very, she's on the internet. She's in all the social places. You can find out everything that you want to know about what's going on. And the book comes out March 24th. So if you're listening to the episode before Tuesday, know that you have to get it on Tuesday. And make sure that you check it out. We want to thank everybody for coming on today. We want to thank C.S. Harris for talking about her book. It's on a 60-minute show today. So we are going to end it. We are excited to be able to be back on Monday with none other than Beyond the Cover with us and Jeff Ayers. And Jeffrey Deaver is going to be on that show. So we are excited to be able to talk with him for the first time on the radio. If you missed the Story Blender last night, that was Steve Barry, so make sure you check that out. Go to suspenseradionetwork.com for all the shows, the listing of everything that we have going on, suspenseradionetwork.com for here, and, of course, Suspense Magazine. Thank you all again, everybody. Enjoy. We will see you all 2 weeks with Inside Edition, and don't forget to check us out, suspenseradionetwork.com. Goodbye, everybody. Enjoy.